Hi, it's great to have your company. You're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. My name's Simon Smart.
And I'm Justine Toe.
In 2004, Cameron Watt was sentenced to 4 years in prison with a non-parole period of 2 years and 6 months. He was 29 years old. He's a country boy living in the city. He hadn't even had a speeding fine up to that point. And yet he found himself swapping a business suit for a baggy green uniform and kissing his wife and three children goodbye. One of those kids was only 4 months old, and heading off to jail. Cameron's crime was white collar, and he certainly paid for it. Cameron was a Christian when he went to jail, but he says that his faith became real in a way that it hadn't been before this ordeal. These days he works as a youth pastor at a church in Sydney, and he's here in the studio to tell us a bit about his story. And we're going to do this in two parts. This is part one. Welcome, Cameron.
Thank you.
Now, let's hear a bit about the gory details first. You were an assistant general manager for a finance company. You'd been given what you now sense was probably too much responsibility at such a young age, and you got yourself into a bit of a fix, didn't you? What happened?
As part of my role, I was put into the acting general manager's role when our then general manager went off for some surgery. In that time, I was approached by a foreign organisation that invested money, as I'd been told, by a lot of organisations within Australia. And my role was to invest money on behalf of the company, and so that's what I did. As part of that, they offered to give me a financial incentive to take that investment with them, but they capitally guaranteed all the money that was going to be for the organisation itself. So I chose to do that investment, received a financial kickback, and as far as I understand, that's still not an illegal event. What the illegal event was that my board of directors didn't know that I'd received a financial incentive to make that investment. And so that's where the law comes in, that it says that I dishonestly gained an advantage by use of position.
So you were unlucky to get caught? Is that how we can understand what? Like, is it a technicality? Is it that you didn't have the particular experience to be making those decisions and maybe weren't aware of the board of directors' discomfort maybe with this kickback?
No, look, I think when I look back in hindsight, I always now go, you should have realised what you were doing was wrong. It was at least, like at best, it was at least unethical to do what I was doing. However, at the time, being caught up in the whole scheme of getting things done, I just didn't think as a mature person and made a rash decision that sadly had such huge consequences for not just for me, but for my wife and for my family and for my church and for my friends and for all sorts of people around me.
Well, can you walk us through what it was like when you realised that, oh gosh, this is bad and we're only at the beginning of this road? What was that like for you?
Well, as Simon introduced, I was a guy that was pretty much a goody two-shoes all my life. Not that I'd wanted to be good, it was more I'd become a people pleaser all through my life. And so when I found out that I was in trouble, it was like my world collapsed. It was so removed from anything I was used to. I had no idea what to do. We were scared. We were sad. Everything felt like it was weighing in on us. We had investigators turning up at our door, telling my wife and I was probably going to jail for 10 years, and that I was not going to be able to see my kids. And then I also had interviews with like the federal police. I'd never had a speeding fine, so I didn't know anything about the legal system from the wrong sides of the track. And so it was just horrific for us. It was in all ways scary for everyone involved. And it was horrible. That's about the only word I can really describe it.
Cameron, I remember you telling me this story that you felt like you were sort of in denial, even at this point, considering yourself something of a victim, blaming other people and so on. But you had a bit of an epiphany on the witness stand of all places.
Yes, I thought that it really wasn't my fault and that I really hadn't intended to hurt my company in any way, shape or form. And then as I was standing in the witness stand, I'd been on the stand for quite some time with my barrister, and he was asking all the normal questions. And then he said, Mr. Watt, do you feel that what you've done was dishonest? And I said yes. And at that point, I think I finally took on the gravity of actually what I'd done was a wrong thing, rather than it being just unlucky or any of those sorts of words. It took on a perspective of, no, you have stepped outside of what you should have done. And that just pulled a proceedings all to a stop. At that stage, I was pleading not guilty in everything, and the judge said, you've effectively just said you were guilty now. The whole case then changed. We were probably doing okay at that stage, but all of a sudden it became, I was guilty.
You were in serious trouble at that point.
Yes.
And yet, you know, you were only up to something as well.
Yep.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity. Our guest in the studio today is Cameron Watt, who in 2004 was sentenced to 2.5 years in prison for a white-collar crime.
Cameron, having effectively declared that you were guilty, then it was pretty certain that you would have to pay for that, and then you'd have to leave your family and your very young children as well. Yeah. What was that like?
I can't begin ever to really comprehend in words what that feeling is like. When I was found guilty, which was just a week or so later through the court proceedings of all of the charges, that was actually my wedding anniversary. My wife was 9 months pregnant with our child, and it was just like my world had collapsed. It was a very silent car trip home between my wife and I, and just not being able to know how to tell our kids. My eldest was only 3.5 at that stage. My youngest was not quite 2. And how do you explain to them just what the consequences of being found guilty could be? We were still hoping that maybe the judge would see me as, you know, this is unusual in my makeup, and that community service or something like that might come through, or a big fine or something. But I think as we sort of walked down that path more and more, we realised that it wasn't going to be a non-custodial sentence. It was going to be that I was going to jail at least for some sort of time. And even at this stage, I'm still thinking, you know, this will be a 6-month sentence. 6 months is okay. I can handle 6 months. And then all of a sudden, when we got to the judgment, which was in April, which is 4 months later after being found guilty, we just lived in limbo, as it were, for 4 months, not knowing what to do, not working because it was no point getting a job to work and then having to give it up in 4 months' time. Rachel wasn't working because she wanted to spend all of her time with me that she could. My kids weren't going to preschool or anything like that. We were wanting to spend all the time we could with them. It was just so terrible. It was an emotional time for all of us.
And that's even before you've gone to jail. What was it like for Rachel and the kids when you were there?
They sometimes say, and I partly agree with it now, that sometimes when a person gets something like cancer even, it's actually easier for the person that actually has the cancer because they have to deal with it. Like their mind says, you know, well, I've got it and I've got to deal with the consequences. I've got to go through the processes. Well, that was the same for me. So for me, whilst it was hard, I was living this out, so it was okay. But for Rachel, it was her sitting on the sideline watching her loved husband being taken away in handcuffs and coming and visiting me where I was all zipped up in these jumpsuits and not being able to even hold my hand. The only thing that we could do was possibly an occasional phone call, which lasted for 4 or 5 minutes, and that was it. And so she then went from being this very much in the centre of all of the life that she was living, of people and having lots of friends, to being somebody who was very much alone. So she would see friends in the street and literally run across the street because she didn't want to see them and have them ask, hey, how's Cameron doing? well, he's in jail now. And she didn't want to deal with that because it was already emotionally horrible on her. She had the pain of three young kids who were, where's dad? Why isn't he coming back? So it was way harder on Rachel. Even though I was in jail, it was way harder on Rachel to deal with all of the consequences of my actions.
Now, Cameron, you, when you went to jail, you'd been a Christian believer for some time, but you've said that you didn't think you would have become the person you are without the jail time. Is there a way in which you kind of look back on this with, is it too much to say, you're almost grateful for that experience?
Yeah, look, I know this will sound unusual, but as a Christian, I was living a life that was just completely focused on me. And I think that the jail experience changed my perception of what was really important. It's not until people, like, in some ways, face massive consequences or massive change in their life that they actually really then start to contemplate, you know, well, what is really important in my life? Is relationship, is chasing after money, is all of these things, are they important to me? And in and through this experience, I obviously had some time while sitting in a jail cell to really work out what was important in my life. And that's where, for me, I actually, even though I would have said I was a Christian, I think in jail I realized truly who God is and how much he loves me, despite the fact here I am, this person sitting in a jail cell, having done something illegal, that God was forgiving and still wanted me in right relationship with him. So I think, yeah, I was very thankful for jail in the long run.
What does it even mean to say you had faith at that point? You know, in jail, what did that mean for you? As you said, your faith is growing and so on.
In jail, I had many opportunities to just walk away from my faith. It was a thing where I could have said, "Well, God, if you really loved me, you could have sorted this out. You could have got it so that I didn't have to be away from my wife." But slowly but surely, God used the situation for me in ways that I could never have imagined. You know, I had inmates, some of the toughest and scariest people that most people will ever see, or not even see or meet, but just imagine any Jean-Claude Van Damme movie, and that's who I was in with. And these guys are just normal guys that have, you know, for a lot of them, 99.99% of their life have done nothing wrong illegally. They've just done one stupid thing. And what we found was is that quite often we had this common ground with them where we could talk about how hard it was being in jail, yet they realised that there was something different about me. And that's not because I big note myself or anything. It was the fact that we were able to talk with inmates who'd never had people care for them, never had someone say to them, you know, I want to pray for your wife and your kids, because I know that even though there's this persona that you're tough, that we were able to realize that all of us are in a situation we don't want to be in. And over time, I developed opportunities with sharing with inmates about faith, what it means that, you know, the prison bars don't determine a faith in God. And I really loved the fact that I got the experience of sharing this acceptance by God despite who we are or what we've become. And that was really liberating for inmates who'd been rejected all their life. They'd never, ever had somebody say to them that they were accepted just as they were. And that was an amazing opportunity. And in the end, by the time I'd finished jail, I had inmates just walking into my cell literally in the middle of the night asking me to pray for them, pray for their family. These are some of the toughest men you'll ever see. And it was just an amazing thing that God opened up this opportunity. And had I not been there, maybe that opportunity may never have existed for them.
You've been listening to Life and Faith from the Centre for Public Christianity, and that's part one of our interview with Cameron Watt. Join us next time when we hear the rest of the story.
I can literally remember thinking, I'm not going to die, they will hit me, but the guard station is so close that the guards will see it happen. They'll charge in, they'll tackle them, and I will just be hurt.
That's next time on Life and Faith. We'll see you then.